Welcome in to another edition of this unnamed podcast. We'll come up with one eventually. I'm Tyler Bischoff, along with me, Mike Grimala from RunRevs.com. You can check out all his stuff over there at RunRevs.com. I'm over at Mountain West Connection. It's MWCConnection.com. I was thinking of something like Inside UNLV Basketball, but that's, I feel like I can be more creative than that.
I can't.
Maybe around Pat McCaw's headband.
Maybe. We'll put a pin in that one.
We'll figure out something. All right. We're talking loss to Nevada. All right, first thing, before we talk about the loss, is this a rivalry game, Mike? I know you're only 3 years into covering this. You're not some Las Vegas native, and this is my first year doing it. But apparently some people don't think this is a rivalry in basketball.
The thing is, to be a rivalry, I think you need the hatred on both sides, and you want it to be a little bit competitive, which I don't think it has been until – I mean, you can't really say that now that Reno has won three in a row in this series. But I get the sense that they don't like each other. There's always the – one of the first things I learned when I got on the beat was you can't call them Nevada. You have to call them Nevada Reno or UNR or the Wolfpack, or people won't like it. So they have a fight over – what to call the schools, and little tips like that, I guess, make it a rivalry. And both teams seem to care about it.
Yeah, it's weird to me when schools think they're, and when I say schools, it's usually just the fan base, think they're better than a rivalry game, which is what I got the sense with UNLV fans and Nevada basketball, is that UNLV fans think they are far superior to Nevada when it comes to basketball, which historically is true, but because they think they're superior, they don't want to bestow the honor upon Nevada and say, yeah, this is a rivalry game. A lot of the time they'd rather say, no, you're not a real rival because you suck.
I think a lot of that also is just when fans want to hedge against losing to someone, and you know, the humiliation of being upset by that team, they don't want to give them the satisfaction of saying this game is important to us.
Well, UNLV has been, I guess you'd say, humiliated three times in a row, losing twice last year and now this year. So they lose 5 seconds left, whatever it was, when the shot went in from Marquise Coleman. And, you know, I wrote about it. Dave Rice said they made some defensive mistakes with how they wanted to guard the ball screen. Pat McCaw went under it instead of over it, and Chris Wood sagged off a little too much instead of taking a step up to contest the would-be jumper. But I've come to the conclusion, I've convinced myself of this. Nevada was playing for the offensive rebound. They were not playing for that shot to go in. And a couple reasons why. Coleman, the guy who took it, shooting 24% from three this year. Now, that was a two-pointer, but it was a foot-on-the-line two-pointer. So it's basically a three. He's not even making one-fourth of his shots from that distance.
So you think he was tabbed as the guy to take the shot with the expectation that he would miss?
Yes, I honestly believe that. He took it with 7 seconds left. They had a chance to take the last shot clock's not on. He takes it with 7 seconds left. I mean, some teams you might take it with three or four and hope, okay, we can get a tip in, but 7 seconds left is like, okay, we might need to get two offensive rebounds to get it to go in. So everything about it, I'm just like, they were playing for the offensive rebound. They were not expecting to make that shot. They were saying, we're getting 50% of our misses. Let's go get one and put it back in right here.
And, I mean, if you watch the play, again, the guy who set the screen on the ball did beat Wood down into the lane. I mean, there were a lot of people down there considering, you know, the last shot, but he did, you know, beat him for position after the shot went up. So, I mean, maybe that does speak to the fact that they were sort of playing, hey, let's get this shot up, and if not, let's take it with enough time that we can throw some guys at the boards and try and come up with another offensive rebound.
And I think Cody Doolin afterwards even said, you know, he didn't really even see the guy shoot it because his guy immediately crashed the boards and he had to try to block him out. So I'm convinced Nevada's entire bench was more surprised that shot went in than they got an offensive rebound, because that's what they were playing for. So this game, you know, Nevada's not any good. Like, this is an awful loss for UNLV. But if you take the last 2 minutes of this game, Rashad Vaughn, UNLV had five possessions. The fifth one was that desperation three from Rashad Vaughn. So UNLV had four true full possessions in the last 2 minutes. Rashad Vaughn got the ball on all four of them. He scored on three of them, a three-pointer, got fouled, and made all four of his free throws. So he had 7 points and a turnover on four possessions in the last 2 minutes. UNLV went to him over and over in that last 2 minutes, and he produced. My question, I guess, is what was stopping Rashad Vaughn from doing that in the first 38 minutes of the game? And to an even greater extent, Chris Wood. Because, I mean, Chris Wood said after they played Arizona that nobody on Arizona could guard him. Nevada doesn't have the players that Arizona has, so how can someone on Nevada guard him? Now, Reno played a zone a lot, and that takes a lot of this out of the question for part of the game, but it just felt like Rashad Vaughn and Chris Wood, even though, what, they both put up 20 points or something, or close to it, it didn't feel like they were dominant offensively in this game like they should have been or could have been.
Yeah, so you want to see Vaughn more involved in the offense from the start of the game and continuously. He's a guy that you probably shouldn't ever forget about when he's out there. You want him on the ball, making plays happen, getting his shots. You shouldn't have to wait until the final 2 minutes for him to start attacking and start being that aggressive in taking over a game, especially against an opponent like this where they don't really have someone that can match up against him.
Yeah, and, you know, Nevada played a lot of zone late in the first half, and that, I think UNLV had a pretty decent lead, and then they started to lose it because Nevada played that zone, and UNLV couldn't score against it. But, I mean, to me, even if a team goes zone, Rashad Vaughn's a good enough player that he can create his own decent shot, or he can create and somebody else is going to get open because the zone breaks down. And same with Chris Wood. I feel like there was a lot of, and I mean, they both scored 20 points, but they could have had more. I mean, they could have had a lot more, I felt. I didn't feel like either one of them made a huge impact on the game throughout the course of it. I felt like there was a lot more to be desired, and it's weird because, you know, Chris Wood had been playing so well, and he dominated a team like Arizona, and then you don't really get that same domination against a lesser opponent. And Rashad Vaughn, we've seen how good he can be offensively getting into the lane, not always finishing, but getting into the lane, and then you don't see a lot of it until the last 2 minutes. So I felt that was weird, but I don't know how much it falls on the coaching staff versus the players themselves, because when they were facing man-to-man defense, they were calling plays for Rashad Vaughn and Chris Wood. They just didn't get a lot of great looks and didn't really dominate through it.
Maybe that speaks to Dave Rice's main point after the game was that he didn't think that they played tough enough and with enough intensity to match what UNR was playing with. So, maybe that speaks to that point. Rashad Vaughn, Chris Wood, good games for both. But, just good. Did they do enough to find that extra gear that you need in conference play when you're playing these games that are intense from the opening tip? Maybe I don't know if it's going to be a wake-up call, but maybe that sort of speaks to Rice's point about the team not being intense enough for the entire game.
By the way, Mike, I'm really excited because I finally found on Twitter the people that yell about their head coach not calling enough plays. I think that's my favorite part of any fan base, is the fans that just say, oh, they don't run plays. Like there's no coach at a Division I level. There's no coach at a high school level that just doesn't run plays. Like they run plays. It's very evident they're running plays too. Some of them don't work. They might not be good plays all the time, or they might get broken up.
They might be defended, but yeah, there's always something. There's always more going on the court than nothing.
I blame football because football's taken over the sports world the last 20 years. And in football, it's very clear when a team runs a play, and it's very clear that each player has a certain assignment. And it's almost like that expectation is carried over to basketball when there's a lot more motion offense. There's a lot more, okay, that part of the play wasn't open, so we go over to the next part. There's a lot of, a secondary break type stuff. I feel like people watch a lot of football. They expect that's what a play looks like, where in basketball, it's a lot more fluid. So I don't know. But I'm very glad I found them because they were very prevalent when I covered Ole Miss. It's part of the reason why I like to write so much about certain plays is because of Ole Miss fans that just yelled about the coaching staff there not calling plays. And I'm like, they're calling plays. They just don't always work because there's five guys trying to stop it that know what they're doing.
It just takes one bad loss to bring them out.
Yes, it was.
Any fan base.
It was glorious. But okay. Rashad Vaughn, 7 points, 4 possessions, the last 2 minutes. Should have been enough to win. Nevada's not a good offensive team, but something you've touched on, last 3 games, all 3 been losses. UNLV can't get stops in the last 2, 5, 7 minutes of games.
I mean, if Rashad Vaughn scores on 3 of the last 4 possessions, it's pretty good, but it's not good enough if you're letting the other team score on 4 of the last 4 or 7 of the last 7. I wrote a story against Wyoming. That game was UNLV had a lead in that game, and Wyoming scored on 7 of their last 8 possessions against Kansas. That game was tied about midway through the second half, and they let Kansas score on 12 of their last 18 possessions. And then last night against Wednesday night against Reno, it's 7 of the last 8 again. So, yeah, late in games, they haven't been able to get – and Rice touched on that a little bit. He had a session with the media on Friday afternoon, and he mentioned that, one possession games, they basically needed against Wyoming and then against Reno, they needed one stop down the stretch, and they couldn't get one stop.
It's weird, and I haven't really gone back and looked at it or paid too much attention to it, but UNLV is a good defensive team. I mean, they're like a top 75 KenPom defensive team.
It's surprising. They're wouldn't say they're a great defensive team, but they're good. Like, they can... throughout the course of the game, they'll get stops, they get blocks, they'll force tough shots. They're generally, I would say, a sound defense with, some good athletes and so a couple good individual defenders. They should be able to do better than they've been doing.
Statistically, I think the only thing that they're bad at on defense is forcing turnovers. They don't do that. But everything else, teams, except for like 3 games, which are all like the Pac-12 games and then Wyoming, teams don't shoot threes very well against UNLV. They don't shoot two-pointers very well. They don't score in the paint. They don't get to the free throw line a lot. Like, teams don't do the things that lead to efficient offenses against UNLV very well, but yet last 3 games, it's just been, the last few minutes, UNLV's got nothing. And, have you noticed anything? Because I haven't really noticed much. Yep. And
I looked at some of these possessions where they're letting teams score late. Some of them are first-shot field goals that teams are making. Some of them, they'll force a miss, but they'll give up the offensive rebound and, the second-chance points. Or they'll commit a foul and they'll give up free throws. And teams they've gone through a stretch where, Wyoming didn't miss free throws down the stretch. Reno didn't really miss free throws down the stretch. That's, a little bit of bad luck. But I couldn't really think of anything. The numbers didn't really say anything. One of the hypotheses that I came up with in the story was maybe they're fatigued because, they're sort of hitting that midway point of the season and they play such a small rotation, really only 8 guys, and 5 of them are true freshmen. So maybe that's becoming a factor. These guys not really, you get freshmen who are playing and practicing more consistently and harder than they were used to in high school. You have the freshman wall. These guys are sort of getting used to the physicality of college basketball and just the everyday grind of it. And that can start to wear on players. And if you have 5 guys going through it at the same time, which makes up the majority of your rotation, that could be a bit of a problem. So, it might be fatigue. Dave Rice on Friday said that he thought that he could see his team his young players sort of hitting the wall around Christmas, which sort of coincides with they beat Arizona on the 23rd. They played Southern Utah after that. He said that around then he could start to feel them, pushing up against the wall a little bit. But other than that, I can't really think of anything, a particular reason why they would be so bad in these close games, the past 3 games, being unable to get a stop down the stretch.
Okay. How long did you cover recruiting?
I've covered recruiting for at least 5 or 6 years.
Okay. How much more basketball do they play in college? Because when you're a top recruit in high school, you play high school basketball, you play AAU basketball. It's a different level of basketball, but I feel like you play enough basketball that there shouldn't be such a significant, okay, this is completely different and I'm too tired.
Well, you're playing high school basketball, you're playing a lot, but if you watch a high school game or an AAU game, there are tons of times when, you know, if you're a star player or even if you're not, you can take time off. You know, you can sort of loaf, you can coast, you can play 75% for most of the game. You can, you know, turn it on when you've got the ball or when you're on offense. And if you can imagine that the practices, I would say, is probably the bigger thing. High school practices and games cannot compare to a Division I practice and the schedule and how often you're practicing and for how long and the physicality of the practice. You're not practicing against your high school classmates now. Now you're practicing against other Division I college basketball players full time, which it can wear on you. And just you hit that point in the season where you've played, you know, 15 to 20 games, which is almost, you know, a full high school season for some guys. You start to feel it a little bit and it can catch up to you. So, I mean, I'm not saying that that's what's happening. That was just one of my ideas of that could be explained a little bit of why. And because they're playing such a small rotation, they only play eight guys. The ninth guy would be Dantley Walker, who's gotten no minutes this year and is not really an option to play a lot of minutes. So they're basically stuck playing eight guys. So that's one of my thoughts. I mean, I'm not sure what else it could be.
And that eighth guy, Jordan Cornish, doesn't typically play big minutes. I don't know. What's he averaging? He's probably under 10, right?
Jordan Cornish is playing 12.4 minutes per game.
Okay, that St. Catherine games helped him out a lot. I think he played like 38 in that. Yeah. But, yeah, you know, you're getting 10 minutes or less from Jordan Cornish in these big games. So, really, you've got seven guys. And, you know, against Nevada, I think Dwayne Morgan, he played less than 15. So, I don't know. So, let me ask you this. They played Kansas, a Sunday game after conference play had started. That weekend was UNLV's bye weekend in Mountain West play. Every team gets a weekend and a weekday off since there's 11 teams. Do you think that was a mistake playing that game at that time in the schedule, given what we've seen the last three games now?
Oh, it obviously made for some tough travel logistics and, you know, cramming that game in there. But I'm not sure of all the machinations that went on to schedule the game. I'm guessing that in order to get they wanted the home and home series with Kansas. Kansas is coming to Las Vegas in 2016. I'm guessing, you know, to get that home and home, they were willing to make that deal and to, you know, sort of put it in that open spot in the schedule. I don't think the loss itself hurt them that much in terms of, you know, wins and losses, black and white. But to the larger point of whether it contributed to some sort of fatigue factor, it might have.
I think any time you get the opportunity to play Kansas, anytime you get Kansas to come to your place, you take it. I don't think it's a mistake in that sense, but I do think they would have been better off playing it before Christmas or something, or right after Christmas, whatever. Maybe not right after Christmas. That's when you want some crappy team like Southern Utah to beat up on. But I think they would have been better off playing it a different time because it set up a really tough stretch for them. And not that Dave Rice knew he was only going to be down to eight players that he could play, but he had a young team get injuries, guys that aren't eligible that maybe they thought could get eligible. I don't know. I think it ends up being a I don't think mistake is the good word to use because it's Kansas. You play them when you can, especially if they're going to come to your place. But I think it hurts them where that game was positioned. Playing the game and losing it didn't hurt them, but where it was positioned on their schedule hurt them, I think, big time.
I mean, I would agree with you. I think that it was definitely not an ideal time to play that game. But like I said, I'm not plugged in enough to know what went into scheduling that game. I'm sure Rice probably wanted to play it or earlier in a more conventional spot. I'm not sure maybe if Kansas could match up with that or what happened there. But that was the time when they could get it in. And I can't really question them for taking the home and home series. Looking back, you know, now in retrospect, now that they're maybe experiencing some fatigue and it may have contributed to the loss against Reno. Now, yeah, in retrospect, it looks like a tough time to play it. But like you said, you can't really turn down Kansas.
All right, NCAA tournament. Doesn't look good. Margin for error is like nothing. How many games are going to lose the rest of the year, Mike? I've got it pegged at like three.
They could probably take a loss at Colorado State, maybe at San Diego State. But you want to beat those teams to sort of help your rating and to help your resume. So you don't want to lose those games. I mean, they could probably drop one of them. But yeah, a very, very thin margin to still be considered an at-large team.
Right now, they've got 16 games left. Eight of those are against the crappy part of the Mountain West, which is San Jose State, Nevada, Utah State, Air Force, Fresno State. They got to win all eight of those. If they lose any of those, they're kind of done, regardless of what they do the rest of the regular season. Then they've got eight games against sort of the good teams in the conference. They got home and homes with San Diego State, New Mexico, and Boise, and then they're going to go to Colorado State, and they have Wyoming at home. To me, they've got to go like 5-3 in those big games. And that would give them five decent wins. Might not all be good wins, because not all those teams are going to make the NCAA tournament. But, you know, if you knock off San Diego State, knock off Wyoming at home, and maybe get Colorado State or Boise, that could be three wins over NCAA tournament teams in conference play. So, to me, you got to win the eight bad teams. You got to beat the eight bad teams, and then you've got to go like 5-3 in those other games. And that would put them at 22-9 and 13-5. In conference play. That's probably second place in the Mountain West. It could be first, I guess, could be third, but I'd guess that's second. 22-9, their RPIs probably would be in the top 60, maybe top 50 at that point. I think that would be, that gets them on the bubble. Does it get them in? Not for sure, but three games is basically what they have left to play with. You can lose three more or else I think you're done.
And then, so in your scenario, you'd play those games, and then you're also adding on whatever they would be able to do maybe in the, that's the regular season, the Mountain West tournament, even if they don't win the tournament, but if they can add, you know, another couple wins, or they can take out one of those top teams again, you know, and maybe make it to the championship game, which is what they did 2 years ago during the Anthony Bennett season. They were, you know, right around the, I would say on the fringe, they were probably in, you know, regardless, but then they, you know, they made a run to the championship game in the conference tournament, and that sort of solidified them. If something like that would happen, three more losses, I could see it maybe getting in, but I wouldn't want to count on it.
Yeah. I don't think they're good enough to do that. The offense is not good enough. If you look at this team offensively, they're just below average in terms of points per possession. They're like right at one or something like that, and that's just like a fourth of a tenth or whatever, 40% of one under the national average. They don't have enough guys that score efficiently. If you look at their eight guys that play, Pat McCall, for as much as we love him, as much as fans and media love Pat McCall and all the good things he does, he's shooting 36% this
year. He's in a really bad shooting slump.
Dwayne Morgan hasn't shot the ball well all year. He's at 36%. Jalon Kendricks at 37%. Okonobo is at 43%, but he's a big guy. All his shots come in the paint. He's got to be up a lot closer to 50, if not over 50%. Rashad Vaughn, he's at 44%, which is okay, but he's scored like 250 points and he's taken 206 shots or something close to that. So he's just kind of barely over a point per shot, which is okay, but not great. But basically more than half of their rotation doesn't score efficiently. The only guys that score efficiently are Cody Doolin and Chris Wood, and Doolin doesn't shoot very much. So the offense isn't good enough. And a lot of these guys are freshmen. They're not, you know, we've only seen them for not even half a season, so they can evolve. They can get better. Pat McCall can shoot the three better. I think he's like at 24% on threes right now, which is kind of ridiculous. But so far, they don't shoot the ball well enough. They don't have enough guys that score efficiently for me to believe this offense is going to be any better and good enough to go 13-5 in conference play and go, that would be 13-3 the rest of the way in conference play. I think the defense is good enough, and the defense can be better too. I think the defense is good enough that they could go legitimately 13-3 the rest of the way out, but they can't score well enough to go 13-3 the rest of the way out. They don't shoot it that well.
Which sounds an awful lot like last year's team, which was similarly, you know, pretty good on defense. They had Ken Burch, who was a very good defender inside, and they had a few different guys who could defend, and their numbers defensively were pretty good, but they just could not shoot, and no one could make a shot, and that's ultimately what, you know, kept them out of the tournament. They just couldn't make enough shots to score enough to beat teams in the Mountain West.
But Pat McCall is a better shooter than that, isn't he?
He's much better shooter, I would say, than, you know, the 24% from three-point range that he's shooting now. I mean, if I had to pick a guy who you need some offense from at some point, is probably Dwayne Morgan, who it seems like he's a lot of turnovers when he gets his hands on the ball. And then you just see these flashes of these great offensive plays where you see that
he had one against Nevada. He drove, spun, and finished a layup, and it was like, damn, do that every time.
Same thing again. I think he had one drive where he just sort of, his first step was just so quick. He just blew by his man right to the rim before the help defense could react, and he just laid it in. And you're just sort of left eyes wide open, just saying, "Wow, why can't, you know, we see that more than once a game?" That's the classic example, I would guess, of a freshman who has all the talent, but it's just sort of not put it together at this level yet. And you're just sort of waiting for the light to come on. And I would say UNLV sort of waiting and sort of desperately waiting and needing him to sort of step up and start producing offensively, because he's a guy who I saw him play in high school a bunch of times, and he's a guy who on the break, around the rim, just a great finisher, a guy who could athletically around the rim just sort of make these shots, and he could get open, he could create shots for himself off the dribble. He was a guy who could finish offensively, and we haven't seen that really yet at this level.
Mike is wonderful and compiles the plus minus of all the lineups that UNLV uses, and I've read what you've written about it. The starters suck. I need you to explain something to me, though, because Dwayne Morgan is in, like, what, the top three of the top four of UNLV's best lineups in terms of plus-minus. But he doesn't do anything offensively. I get that he's been very good on the defensive end. How is he in the best lineups? Because he does not play like he's one of the five best players.
The one thing that I could say is maybe is possibly just a spacing issue. If taking Good Luck Okonobo off the floor and leaving Chris Wood as the true big man, that's, you know, their all of their best lineups basically have either Morgan or Kendrick at power forward, and, you know, they have a three-guard backcourt, you know, with Doolin, McCaw, and Vaughn, or Doolin, Vaughn, Kendrick, and Morgan at the same time. I mean, most of their best lineups are smaller lineups. And you look at Wood and Okonobo together, a lot of those lineups have negative point differentials. So, I mean, while it's great to have, you know, both of those guys blocking shots and it really looks good, I think maybe you have to start thinking about, is it really beneficial to play those two guys together as much as they have been?
I don't think Dave Rice is going to change the starting lineup until something goes wrong.
He said on Friday that he wasn't planning any lineup changes. But if you look a little deeper in terms of game by game, you're starting to see that starting lineup not playing as many minutes together. I mean, they start the game, but now it used to be they would start the game and play the first 5 minutes and play the first 4 minutes and change, you know, and then the first media timeout, they would start making changes. But then, you know, the past two, I think even the past three games, you're seeing them, you know, play the first 2 minutes and then the next stoppage, you know, either McCaw's coming in or Morgan's coming in. So, I mean, those five guys are starting the game, but I think you're starting to see more flexibility in terms of which five guys are actually playing the most minutes together.
Yeah. A lot's made of starting lineups, and to me it's always more important which five are playing the last 2 minutes of a close game as opposed to which five are starting. But just because they're your starters and because you start both halves that way typically, even if they're not your best lineup, even if you don't use them a whole lot, your starters are still the guys that play the most minutes together of any lineup. And for UNLV this season, that's the lineup that's played the most minutes, I believe. So I don't know, because Dave Rice, he is Everything he's said, he's not going to change it unless somebody gets hurt there's going to have to be something really dramatic for him to change the starting lineup. And I don't think that's a big issue. I think it's more important who's kind of playing late in those games. You don't see Jalon Kendrick playing late in the games. You see a lot more Pat McCaw in there. And sometimes Dave will do play matchups in terms of Cody Doolin's on the bench for defense or whatever, and then he's back in if they need an offensive possession. So I think it's much more important who wins the game, but it's weird that the starting lineup can be kind of as bad as it is. And it's even weirder to me that Dwayne Morgan can't score and that's their best offensive lineup. But I think you're right with the spacing part, because if you look at what UNLV's good at offensively, it really kind of centers around Rashad Vaughn being able to get into the lane and finish, and Cody Doolin creating by getting into the lane, or Pat McCaw even getting into the lane. That's sort of their best part, or Chris Wood catching at 15, 18 feet and driving to the basket. That is harder to do when Okonobo is standing there at the block, or when Okonobo and Chris Wood are there at the block. Even though Dwayne Morgan isn't a true floor spacer in that he's scaring anybody with his shooting, he has, I guess, shown enough that if he catches it from 15 feet, 18 feet, he can make a move and get to the basket and score every now and then enough to scare a defense to say, okay, we can't just leave him completely alone.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned also that Chris Wood, you know, he can shoot it, and you could say, you know, you can play him with Okonobo because he can step outside and shoot it. But a lot of Wood's offense comes from facing up and putting the ball on the floor and going to the rim. So having another big guy out there means the defense is going to have another big help defender sort of waiting on that. And it's just, I think it might clog things up. I'd have to look deeper into it and actually, you know, do some like film breakdowns to see what's going on. But I mean, that's theoretically what you would want to try to avoid if you were looking for your best offensive lineups.
All right. UNLV's playing San Jose State. Somehow a team that's lost three in a row is 21-point favorite. In a conference game, that's how bad San Jose State is. They're one of the 5 worst teams in Division I. I guess they have some of their players back. I guess at one point they were down to like 5 basketball players and had to go pick up some football players, but they've got some of them back. But I'll ask you this way. How many points does Danley Walker score against San Jose State?
Danley Walker, let's see. These multiples of 3. I'll say.
Yeah.
I'll go with 6 points. I'll go on the low end. I'll say 6 points.
I don't know. I think for some reason, you know, he won't play in the first half. He'll come in when it's a 20-point game with 4 minutes to go, and yeah, he'll hit 2 threes. That sounds about right.
Yeah, I did a little bit of looking back in San Jose State just because it's so odd. What they're going through. You, like you said, they got a few of their players back, but a week ago, just like 1 week ago, they played Wyoming. And it was actually ended up being a close game. I think Wyoming won by 5 points, but San Jose State played 6 guys for the entire game. They played 5 starters, and they had 1 guy who came off the bench. So they had 3 starters, played 40 minutes, the beginning to end, and then the other 2 guys got 3 or 4 minute breaks each, and they had one reserve.
God, I feel bad when coaches and players have to go through that. Like, it's just, I don't know. I feel bad for coaches and stuff when just normal basketball stuff happens and you have to deal with it. Like, when you lose on a buzzer beater shot by a guy that's shooting 24%. But when you've got to play 3 kids the whole game and just because you don't have other players, that's just, I don't know. I feel bad for San Jose State, but... I'll say this. If UNLV loses to San Jose State, maybe Dave Rice should be fired.
That would pretty much be the end of your season, I would say, if you losing that game. It's basically, this is an elimination game for UNLV. You win this game or you're eliminated.
I went and looked at some of the teams that were on the bubble last year and got in, so the 11 and 12 seeds in the NCAA tournament, and was looking at sort of their worst losses, and... Nobody had a loss to somebody as bad as San Jose State. You know, there were losses to like UAB, a loss to like Texas A&M, who wasn't very good last year. Illinois State was on there. Xavier wasn't very good last year. Xavier got in. They had a bad loss. Wake Forest wasn't very good last year. But none of those teams are San Jose State bad. Those teams are kind of close to Nevada bad. You can survive the Nevada loss as long as you put some other stuff together. But nobody had a like plus 300 RPI loss and got in. But I don't know. Are they? Does UNLV cover 21 points?
I would be the last person to ask. I'm not much of a gambler. I only lose, so I'm not. 21 points?
That's a lot. That's a lot.
It's tough to beat anyone by 21 points. I mean, you really have to play well to beat someone by 21 points.
Yeah, I mean, what, you know, did you, I don't even think UNLV beat Southern Utah by 21 points. Wasn't the final like 16, 17, something like
if
that?
If you're betting this game, you're betting.
Okay, they beat the hell out of Southern Utah. I was wrong. They beat the hell out of Southern Utah.
If you're betting on this game, you're basically betting on how hot Dantley Walker gets in the finals, in the final 3 minutes of this game. If you're betting UNLV to cover, you need him to, instead of hitting two, you need him to hit like five in the final minutes. And then if you bet them to not cover, you're rooting against Dantley Walker to miss those garbage 3-pointers at the end of the game. That's basically what it's coming down to.
Those are going to be the most important Dantley Walker threes of his life.
For someone, it's going to be.
Does he need to play more? I mean, fans want him to play more, but does he need to play more?
The fans. It's funny for a guy who does not play much this year, and maybe never will play that much. It may be the same for you, but I get asked more questions about Dantley Walker than probably any other player on the team. Fans just like are captivated by him and his whole story. He's like a hometown hero, a local high school legend, and obviously he's the best shooter on the team. But you know, he's small, he's not really athletic. You watch him running around out there, and it's clear that you know he stands out among UNLV, which is a team just full of premium athletes. So he stands out when he's out there, you know, doing his thing. I don't know. Would it be the worst thing in the world to throw him a couple minutes in the first half, you know, of one of these games, maybe against the San Jose State? Can't you give him a few minutes in the first half knowing that, hey, what's the worst that can happen? You know, his defender, you know, posts him up a couple times or beats him down the court. I mean, what's the worst that can happen?
Everything we've basically talked about so far today, UNLV they don't have guys that can shoot. Their offense has struggled this year. They're not very good against zone defenses. They maybe need a little bit more in terms of spacing. Everything we've said kind of says, hey, Dantley Walker could fix that. And I think your defense is going to take a big hit if Dantley Walker's out there and having to defend somebody. But I don't know. I think it would be worth the try, and especially you've only got eight guys playing right now. It's not like you're got other guys that really need the minutes or whatever. So I don't know. I think it would be okay if you put Dantley Walker in there. I don't think Dave Rice does for any meaningful minutes, but I think they'd survive if they did.
And the other thing that you have to consider is that from a coach's perspective, if they put Dantley Walker in the first half against San Jose State, and it happens. You know, the Dantley Walker thing happens, and he hits four three-pointers in a row, which is entirely within the realm of possibility with the way he shoots. Then all of a sudden, you've got a Dantley Walker situation on your hands with the way that the fans are about him. You've got you're going to have fans chanting his name all the time to get in the game. You're going to have a lot of pressure to play him more. You're going to have the media asking about him. It will become a thing pretty fast if that happens. So I think that you also try – I'm not saying the coaches are, you know, defending against Dantley, that happening for Dantley Walker, but it's it may not be worth the risk-reward of, you know, giving him extended run against a team like San Jose State.
He's got the – he's the only player with a quick release on the team. Like, I think from watching guys shoot and trying to just be like, okay, why aren't these guys making shots? Everybody on this team has a very slow release, basically. I think Rashad Vaughn, he kind of varies sometimes. He can get a quick release off. But everybody almost cocks it down to their waist and back up to shoot it. But Dantley is like catch and shoot. It's unbelievable.
No, he can get a shot off. That's the one thing I'll say about him when people say, oh, how is he going to get a shot off at the college level? I tell him, like, that's not, you don't have to worry about that. He'll get a shot off. He's a guy who knows how to find space, and he pretty much trained his whole life with that in mind. I mean, he knows he's 5'9". Like, that's not a surprise to Dantley Walker. He's known all along that he's going to have to compensate for some things by having a quick release, by, you know, finding space, getting his feet set quickly, and getting his shot off. He knows that, and he's good at it. You see him work on it every day in practice. You'll see him shooting around before practices, just sort of working on that kind of stuff. So, I mean, he knows that, and he can get his shot off.
Does UNLV have the best practice squad in the country? Between Jerome Seegers and Ben Carter and Dantley Walker?
That's a pretty good threesome. I mean, that Seegers, a guy I didn't know much about before he got here, but he's looked good. I mean, that's a guy that they, his waiver didn't go through for this season, but that's a guy that they definitely could have used this year with the way he can shoot it.
Yeah, and Dave Rice has mentioned Ben Carter a couple times. He loves Ben Carter.
Yeah, he does. He you could see it in his eyes when he talks about Ben Carter that, you know, he wishes he had someone, a big man like that, to sort of, I think he mentioned in the post game, you know, that it's when Nevada Reno sort of worked them on the boards with effort, that's what Ben Carter does every day in practice to the first team. You can kind of see that, you know, that how much he wishes he had Ben Carter to throw in there.
See, that's part of the things I feel sorry for coaches about, that you've got a really good practice squad that you can't use in Seegers and Carter. And, you know, I mean, hell, Daquan Cook's not on the practice squad because he's hurt, but, you know, he's got a lot of good players that aren't playing this year that would certainly have been helpful. But, okay, Dantley Walker, 6 points. He's seven. He's going to hit an and one three. 7 points for Dantley Walker. But Mike Grimala, runrebs.com, Tava Bischoff, MWCConnection.com. Sure, we don't have a name. I don't know, maybe around Pat McCaw's headband. Or maybe the color of Pat McCaw's headband? No, that doesn't work very well for a title of a podcast. I don't know.
You know what? Next week. Let's just push it off to next week.
Okay, yeah, and then we'll push it off to the week after that.
Right.
Sounds good.
Right.
Okay, well, for Mike, thank you so much for listening to whatever we're going to end up naming this podcast.